Who remembers the conclusion or the essence, the final instructions of Sanat Kumar to Prithu Maharaj? Raise your hand. Don't say anything. Just raise your hand if you remember what those final instructions were. Yes? Is that a raised hand or just a... Yeah. Specifically, Pallava. One should take shelter. Plavan. One should take shelter of the Lord. I'll read those last two verses. That's 39 and 40. The devotees who are always engaged in the service of the toes of the lotus feet of the Lord. What is the significance of being engaged in the service? Because one could just say one engaged in the service of the lotus feet of the Lord, or just in the service of the Lord. What's the significance of the lotus feet? And what to speak of the toes of the lotus feet?
Their significance, insignificance.
Excuse me?
Pointing out
insignificance, yes. The most respectable part of the body is the head, and the lowest portion of the feet is the feet of the body. So the lowest portion of the Lord's feet is the Lord's lotus feet. But they are like a lotus, and they are transcendental, and they are worshipable and worthy of service. Indeed, that was specifically what Prithu Maharaj was aspiring for in his own prayers, service to the Lord's lotus feet. So those who are actually engaged in the service of the toes of the lotus feet of the Lord can very easily overcome the hard-knotted desire for fruitive activities. And in the Lord's Sanat Kumar's instructions, those desires for fruitive activities were that which constricts the consciousness. And thinking that that is one's pleasure is the greatest obstacle, or attaining the pleasures, cause working to gain pleasure for oneself is the greatest obstacle, these type of desires, or thinking that those things are more pleasurable than the devotional service of the Lord. This is a great obstacle in devotional service. So Prithu Maharaj was desiring the service of the Lord's lotus feet, and the result of that, attaining that service, is easily overcome the hard knot of desires for fruit of activities. Wide toes. Even an insignificant part of the feet. What else? And delicate. Very, very delicate. So in the description there is describing the Lord's beauty. Very delicate. His toes are like petals. Very delicate. Petals of lotus flowers. Because if the feet, if you think of the foot like this, facing as opposed to like that, and this is the lotus, these are the petals of the lotus. Yeah, they are sort. I think Pallava, which, yeah, Pallas. Palasa means petals or toes. So if they're lotus feet, palas means they're lotus petals. Yat pada pankaja palasa valasa bhaktya. So this is very difficult to do, to stop or untie this hard, the knot of desire for fruitive activities. It is encased in one's false ego, the ahankar. And the jnanis and the yogis, they try to do this, but forever they cannot do so. Therefore, the conclusion is you should engage in the devotional service of Krishna, who is the son of Vasudeva. Because, now just take that word of the hard-knotted desire for fruitive activities. In one sense, a knot. It's very small. Of course, if you have a huge rope and you tie a knot in it, the knot will be very big. But that knot of fruit of activities is actually an ocean, the ocean of nescience. It is so big. And the ocean of nescience is very difficult to cross because it's infested with many dangerous sharks. So the metaphor changes from a knot to an ocean. A knot is hard to untie. An ocean is impossible to cross. And the sharks are the desires. Although those who are non-devotees undergo severe austerities and penances to cross that ocean, the yogis and the karmis, and the jnanis rather, we recommend that don't perform those penances. You simply take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, which are like boats for crossing that ocean. Although the ocean is difficult to cross, by taking shelter of his lotus feet, those boats, you will cross, you will overcome all dangers. So that is the instruction. And the way to attain that type of unflinching attraction is to hear constantly, becoming immersed, saturated with hearing about Krishna. The consciousness has to become fully immersed in Krishna. It is not to take shelter of a boat, you have to be fully in it. If just your fingers are in it, and in the boat, and the rest of your body is outside of the boat, does that sound very safe to you?
No.
Why?
Because
you're already off. And you're only holding on by your fingers. But what happens if there's a wave, a big wave comes along, a big material desire? It'll knock you right off. Even the little grip you have. So one, the safe position is in the boat. The consciousness has to be involved in Krishna. Why? We read a purport where Prabhupada said why. Fruit of activities is the symptom of the ocean. Material desires is the simple symptom of fruit of activities. The sharks are compared to fruit of desires. Why does one have to be intensely engaged in devotional service, which means within the boat, sheltered in the, fully sheltered in the Lord's lotus feet? Yes, but remember what that's the negative side. What's the positive? What occurs when one is fully immersed? Very intense bliss. And unless one experiences transcendental happiness, unless one is actually satisfied, then one may be tempted to what? Go for a swim in the shark-infested waters. And then what tends to happen to those who swim in shark-infested waters? They become shark food. They feed. And if you feed the material desires, they don't become satisfied. The sharks become mad. And they will gobble you up. When there's a little bit of blood in the water, the sharks become mad. Do you know that? So after instructing Maharaj Prithu in this way, to take to devotional service, remove your bodily concept of life, attain the bliss of being fixed in the Lord's service by constantly submerging yourself in His glories. So the king, whose name was Prithu Maharaj, he responded, "O Brahmana, O powerful one, formerly, previously, Lord Vishnu showed me his causeless mercy, indicating that you would come to my house. And to confirm that blessing, you have all come. So Lord Vishnu predicted this. Prabhupada says something interesting in his purport. The first part of the purport just paraphrases this. In other words, this is a few sentences down. In other words, when the Lord makes a prediction, he fulfills that prediction through some of his devotees. So who is fulfilling the prediction? If he fulfills it through his devotees, by definition, he is fulfilling it. But his power or his desire is fulfilled with the through the devotee. So who does the devotee say who has fulfilled the prediction?
God.
He says, who?
God.
Lord, Krishna. God has done this. And is that true? Yes, it is true. But who does Krishna say has done it? He says, my devotee. He wants to glorify his devotee. And is that true? Yes. So how could both be true? Actually, there's a cooperation between the desire of the devotee and the desire of God. And that's a devotee's business, is to fulfill the desires of the Supreme Lord. Dva ima purusha loke chara akshara evacha chara sarvabhutani akshara something. That there are two kinds of living entities. One is fallible and one is infallible. The fallible, the one who is faulty, he is different. His desire is different from the desire of God. That is called the conditioned soul, and he's in the material world. One who is perfect, infallible, he has made his desire one with Krishna's desire. So Prabhupada's purport continued. Similarly, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu predicted that both his glorious names and the Hare Krishna Mahamantra would be broadcast in all the towns and villages of the world. Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur and Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada desired to fulfill this great prediction, and we are following in their footsteps. If one thinks oneself anything other than a servant, one is in Maya. Following the footsteps means trying to please them, following their instructions, serving them. So Prabhupada is not taking the credit, but he has made his endeavor to please them. And this is the art, really the art of Krishna consciousness. Doing something and not becoming overwhelmed by Maya is somehow remaining a servant. The consciousness of a servant of Sri Guru and Gauranga. This is the whole thing. And then, as Krishna told Lord Brahma, then you, if you remain in that consciousness, you won't be carried away by the waves of the material world, even if you do something wonderful. But if we step one step out of the boat of the service of the Lord's lotus feet, then immediately we will be caught by the sharks of desires. We will think, people don't recognize what wonderful things I have done. They don't know who I am yet, but they will find out who I am, my power. Don't they see that I'm empowered? Very dangerous thinking for a devotee. Can't step outside of the position of being a servant. Every time we think something else, we are caught by Maya. And the mind will tend to think something else, for sure. But it's really true. We can't do anything without Krishna doing it. I can't lift my arm unless Krishna sanctions it. So if I'm so dependent on Krishna to lift my hand, to lift even one finger, I'm so dependent on Krishna. So where is the question of pride entering without illusion? It is illusion that causes the pride. So Prabhupada continues, regarding his devotee, Lord Krishna told Arjuna, Kanteya pratijanihi name bhakti pranashyati. O son of Kunti, declare it boldly that my devotee will never perish. The point is that the Lord himself could declare such things, but it was his desire to make the declaration through Arjuna and thus doubly assure that his promise would never be broken. The Lord himself promises and his confidential devotee executes the promise. So what has Prithu Maharaj said so far in his reply to the prayers? Yes, simple. Next text, 43. My dear Brahmana, you have carried out the order thoroughly. You have done what the Lord said because you are also as compassionate as the Lord. That means it's the dual working between the desire of the servant of the Lord and the Lord. It takes some activity. It's not just Krishna's mercy. It's also the devotee's mercy that anything happens. The living entity who is serving Krishna has to put in his desire too, his compassion. It is my duty, therefore, because you have been compassionate to me, because if it's only Krishna, then he should have felt thankful to Krishna for Sanat Kumar's instructions. It is Krishna, but it's also Sanat Kumar, his compassion too. So it is my duty, therefore, to offer you something. But there is a problem. All I possess are but remnants of food taken by great saintly persons. What shall I give? In other words, everything that Prithu Maharaj, and he was the king of a big kingdom, but his whole kingdom was given to him to rule by the saints, the Brahmins, such as Bhrigu Muni. So therefore, he was ruling it on their behalf. He wasn't thinking himself as the king. He was thinking of himself as the servant of the Brahmins. And he never strayed from that consciousness. Is that hard to do in the material world? Not stray from the consciousness of being a servant? What do you think? Oh, it's the most difficult thing. Because as soon as there's some success or some failure, we take the credit, we take the blame. And if you take the credit, you take the blame. So he was thinking, this kingdom is actually the property of the Brahmins, so how can I give it to you? What do I have outside of this extra that I, for myself, can give to you? There's nothing. I'm in a difficult situation. In the last section of the purport to 44, Prabhupada said, it has already been admitted that all the king's property belonged to the Brahmins and that Prithu Maharaj was simply using it for the welfare of the state. If it were actually the property of the Brahmins, how could it be offered again to them? Because they were the topmost Brahmins. In this regard, Srila Sridhar Swami has explained, he's given an example that makes it clear, that this offering is just like the servant's offering of food to his master. The food already belongs to the master, for the master has purchased it. But the servant, by preparing food, makes it acceptable to the master and thus offers it to him. In this way, everything belongs to Prithu Maharaj. Everything belonging to Prithu Maharaj was offered to the Kumaras. Thus, now, comment. This isn't Prithu Maharaj's words, but whoever is narrating. Who is narrating this part? Maitreya Muni, Vidura. Since only a person who is completely educated according to the principles of Vedic knowledge deserves to be commander-in-chief. So the four Kumaras, they hold the Vedic knowledge in their hands. And their conclusion is devotional service. And to be devotional service, in devotional service means you acknowledge that the Lord is the master and you are the servant. So one who has completely educated according to the principles of Vedic knowledge can be commander-in-chief. The king means one who is fixed as a servant of Krishna. Otherwise he will do horrible things, forced by false ego. So he only can be commander-in-chief, ruler of the state, the first to chastise and the proprietor of the whole planet. So one can rule the world and not be affected. One can create a universe like Lord Brahma did and not be affected if he is fixed, fully fixed, as a servant of Krishna, Guru and Krishna. So therefore, Prithu Maharaj offered everything to the Kumaras. The Kshatriyas, text 46, Vaishyas and Sudras eat their food by virtue of the Brahmins' mercy. It is the Brahmins who enjoy their own property, clothe themselves with their own property, and give charity with their own property. In other words, everything belongs to the Brahmins. So therefore, when one gives charity to a Brahmin, of course this is the way the Vedic culture was organized, and contemporary culture is not organized in this way. But one gives charity to the Brahmin, he's giving that which already belongs to him, back to him. So one can't even be proud of giving in charity. One can't be proud of anything legitimately. Prabhupada explains it in his purport. He puts a practical edge on this and explains, actually the Brahmins do not live at others' cost. They live by spending their own money, although it appears they are collecting the money from others. Kshatriyas and Vaishyas have no right to give charity, for whatever they possess belongs to the Brahmins. Therefore, charity should be given by the Kshatriyas and Vaishyas under the instructions of the Brahmins. Unfortunately, at the present moment, there is a scarcity of Brahmins. And since the so-called Kshatriyas and Vaishyas do not carry out the orders of the Brahmins, the world is in a chaotic condition. So the Brahmins, those who have knowledge, those who have a spiritual perspective on life, should determine who is worthy of charity, where the charity should be placed by the Kshatriyas and Vaishyas. 47. Prithu Maharaj continued, how can such persons, who have rendered unlimited service by explaining the path of self-realization in relation to the Supreme Personality of God, and in other words, you've given me such incredible wealth, spiritual wealth, by your instructions to surrender to the Lord, potent instructions coming from your realized consciousness. And this is given, this explanation is given for our enlightenment with complete conviction and Vedic evidence. How could such a person be repaid except by folded palms containing water for their satisfaction? So folded palms containing water for their satisfaction, that alludes to when you want to satisfy the Ganga, all you can do is take some Ganga water in your palms and offer it back to the Ganga. Someone may say, how foolish, it's Ganga water, the Ganga possesses so much water, what are you doing? You're offering the Ganga what already belongs to the Ganga, but the example had already been given of the servant cooking and offering back to the master that which already belongs to the master. So can that cause, does the Ganga gain anything when you offer water to the Ganga that is already belongs to the Ganga? No. So what causes the satisfaction? for offering the Ganga that. They are already satisfied. So the last line of this verse, or the request, is you have made an act of compassion. So please be satisfied with your compassionate act to instruct me. What can I give you in return that can equal the kindness that you have shown me by your transcendental instructions? So the happiness that one gets from acting properly, compassionately, that satisfaction, let that be your reward. Let that be an example of your compassionate mercy, unlimited mercy. So the last sentence is, such great personalities can be satisfied only by their own activities, which are distributed amongst human society out of their unlimited mercy. How can I repay you for what you've given me? And Prabhupada's purport quotes, right in the, at the end, last paragraph, it quotes Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Knowledge of Krishna is such a great gift that it is impossible to repay the benefactor. Therefore, Prithu Maharaj requested the Kumaras to be satisfied by their own benevolent activities and delivering souls from the clutches of Maya. The king saw that there was no other way to satisfy them for their exalted activities. So compassion is considered an exalted activity. The word Vinoda Patram can be divided into two words, Vina and Udapatram, or can be understood as one word, Vinoda Patram, which means joker. What is joker? A jester. What the king used to carry to keep with him a jester or a joker. So to lighten the mood, he would, because, you know, off with this one's head, attack this one, cut off this one's arm. So the jester would keep the mood light. So a joker's activity simply arouses laughter. That's his job. When the king asked his jester, Gopal Ban, who he was always making funny jokes and everything, he said, Gopal Ban, what is the difference between you and a fool? And Gopal Ban went, about 4 feet. Famous. But very, very clever, very, very funny. So he insulted the king and then laughed. Ah! And the king had, he just called me a fool. So a joker's activities simply arouse laughter, and a person who tries to repay the spiritual master or teacher of the transcendental message of Krishna becomes a laughing stock, just like a joker, because it is not possible to repay such a debt. The best friend and benefactor of all people is one who awakens humanity to its original Krishna consciousness. How can one pay an eternal gift when someone gives one something worthy that is going to bring one to eternal life? How could one repay that with something of this temporary, ephemeral, ever-shifting material world? So if one thinks I've paid off my debt, then one becomes a laughing stock. He doesn't understand what the gift actually is. The great sage Maitreya continued. This is text 48. So the narration, it's changing now from Prithu Maharaj's words of thanks to narration of Maitreya. Being thus worshipped by Maharaj Prithu, the four Kumaras, who are masters of devotional service, became very pleased. Indeed, they appeared in the sky and praised the character of the king, and everyone observed them. So usually, common people cannot observe the activities of the four Kumara, but here, by the mercy of Prithu Maharaj, everyone could see. Amongst great personalities, Prithu Maharaj was the chief. Why was he considered so great? By virtue of his fixed position in relationship to spiritual enlightenment. What does that mean? Yes, Sankirtan Das Prabhu. Yes, and he was fixed in that. He did not waver from that. The mind tends to waver. What does it waver to? Sense gratification. I am the center. Why should I serve anyone? This is wrong. I'm right. So many things. Prabhupada says in the purport, remaining fixed in devotional service gives one the utmost in self-satisfaction. Actually, self-satisfaction can be achieved only by pure devotees who have no desire other than to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Since the Supreme Personality of Godhead has nothing to desire, he is fully satisfied within himself. Similarly, a devotee who has no desire other than to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead is as self-satisfied as the Supreme Lord. Very heavy, very deep, not superficial. Everyone is hankering after peace of mind and self-satisfaction, but these can only be achieved by becoming a pure devotee of the Lord. So what is said in this, Prabhupada say, what does it mean to be a pure devotee of the Lord? What does the purport say? What is Prabhupada saying? Because we say, oh, he's a pure devotee, he's not a pure... What does it mean to be a pure devotee? But what does it mean practically? Yes. And in the exact words of Prabhupada here, he has no desire other than to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In other words, he has placed Krishna in the center. That is called Bhagavad Dharma, the activities that will place Krishna again in the center. And false ego activities, impelled by false ego, means activities with me in the center. But I can't be in the center. It's so obvious. No wonder no one who thinks himself in the center can be peaceful. Just imagine trying to organize the universe to act with you in the center. Imagine how much anxiety one will attain by trying to organize the universe to act according to your desires and your wants and your needs and what you think is best. No wonder there can't be any peace of mind like that. So peace of mind. What verse? Bhagavad Gita. Peace formula. More about the qualities of Prithu Maharaj. Being self-satisfied, Prithu Maharaj executed his duties as perfectly as possible according to the time and his situation, strength, and financial position. His only aim in all of his activities was to satisfy the Absolute Truth. In this way, he duly acted. So he was acting as a king. And he was acting as a king to the best of his ability, his duties, according to his capacity at that particular time. So that implies that one's capacity will change according to time, circumstances, etc. But he was always acting, this is what he was fixed in, performing his duties for the pleasure of Krishna. And this was the specific instruction that the Lord had told him. And this was the specific instruction that he had instructed the citizens. How to achieve perfection through acting in one's, performing one's prescribed duties, vanashrama duties, for Krishna's pleasure. None of his activities were carried out for sense gratification. He was considering, what should I do now? How much should I spend for this? How should I approach this? And he was thinking, what will please Krishna, and I will act in that way. So this is wonderful consciousness, and it teaches us what consciousness we should aspire for. It's so practical. It's not just a rigid following of duties. But what's rigidly observed is one's focus on pleasing Krishna. And then according to the time, place, and circumstance, how that will be enacted will be adjusted if one is sincerely trying to please Krishna. Maharaj Prithu completely dedicated himself to be an eternal servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, transcendental to material nature. Consequently, all the fruits of his activities were dedicated to the Lord. So he acted for the Lord and renounced the fruit of his activities for the Lord. And he always thought of himself as the servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the proprietor of everything. So this is the perfection of karma yoga. This is how what Prabhupada explains in the purport. We'll read some of this purport. The life and dedication of Prithu Maharaj, and this was again what the Lord had instructed Prithu Maharaj, this is what he preached and this is what he practiced. The life and dedication of Maharaj Prithu in the transcendental loving service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead serve as a good example of karma yoga. What was it? His activities were dedicated to the Lord. He gave the Lord the fruit of his activities. He thought of himself as a servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The term karma yoga is often used in Bhagavad Gita, and herein Prithu Maharaj is giving a practical example of what karma yoga actually is. The first requirement for the proper execution of karma yoga is given in herein. Phalam brahmani sanyasya or vinyasya. One must give the fruits of his activities to the Supreme Brahman, Parabrahma, Krishna. And by doing so, one actually situates himself in the renounced order of life, sannyas. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 18.2, giving up the fruits of one's activities to the Supreme Personality of Godhead is called sannyas. Kamyanam. What else did Krishna tell Arjuna in the second chapter? Yes, do your duty, renounce the fruit, karma yoga. But this constantly thinking of Krishna and performing one's duties to please Krishna, not just renouncing the fruit, while considering oneself an eternal servant of Krishna, this is what it makes it bhakti, the perfection of karma yoga. So Prabhupada says a little later in the purport, anyone can practice karma yoga. But it is especially easy for the householders who can install the deity of the Lord in the home and worship him according to the methods of bhakti yoga. This method includes 9 items: hearing, chanting, remembering, serving, worshipping the deity, praying, carrying out orders, serving Krishna as friend, and sacrificing everything for him. These methods of karma yoga and bhakti yoga being broadcast all over the world by the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Anyone can learn these methods simply by following the examples of the members of the society. So that means the members of the society should follow these instructions. 52. Maharaj Prithu, who is very opulent due to the prosperity of his entire empire. So there was no loss by him doing this. His following the principles of sacrifice, doing his duties, brought such opulence to his kingdom, his entire empire. And he remained at home as a householder. Since he was never inclined to utilize his opulences for the gratification of his senses, he remained unattached, exactly like the sun, which is unaffected in all circumstances. So this is what it means to be a pure devotee, fixed in the service of Krishna. Fixed, one's pleasure is Krishna's pleasure. And then one like the son doesn't become contaminated regardless of what circumstance he is in. Rather, the place where he is becomes purified. 53, so more about the qualities of his ruling and his activities. Being situated in the liberated position of devotional service, Prithu Maharaj not only performed all fruitive activities, meaning all the his dutifully performing all the sacrifices he was supposed to, but also he begot 5 sons by his wife Archie. Indeed, all his sons were begotten according to his own desires. In other words, the children, they reflect the consciousness of the parents during the conception. So Prithu Maharaj's consciousness and Archie's consciousness was pure, and therefore the 5 children were pure. So after begetting 5 sons named Vijitasya, Dumrakesh, Hariyaksha, Davin, and Vrika, Prithu Maharaj continued to rule the planet. He accepted all the qualities of the deities who govern the other planets. So he was so powerful that he had all the qualities of the demigods. So interesting how he was so different than Vena, but yet he fulfilled the words of Vena. Vena said, all the demigods are in my body, why worship the demigods, worship me? But practically speaking, Prithu Maharaj had all those powers, but it wasn't due to illusory self-importance, but his powers were due to his pure devotion. He was empowered, and therefore he is Shaktivesh avatar. Krishna showed how to rule through him. How wonderful. Text 55. Since Prithu Maharaj was a perfect devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he wanted to protect the Lord's creation by pleasing the various citizens according to their various desires. Therefore, Prithu Maharaj used to please them in all respects by his words, mentality, works, and gentle behavior. Here is Prabhupada's purport. We'll start a little of the way down, perhaps a third of the way. Although this material world is condemned when it is compared to the spiritual world, because we criticize the material world, there is still some purpose behind it. Modern scientists and philosophers cannot understand that purpose, nor do they believe in the existence of a creator. They try to establish everything by their so-called scientific research, but they do not center anything around the Supreme Creator. A devotee, however, can understand the purpose of creation, which is to give facilities to the individual living entities who wanted to lord it over material nature. So there is a dual purpose to the material creation. One is Krishna's reciprocation with all the desires that conditioned souls have, want to attempt to become happy by lording it over material creation. So Krishna gives, here's the creation, you try to be happy, go ahead, try to enjoy this. You want to fly like a bird, okay, become a bird, have wings. You want to swim like a fish, you think that will bring you happiness, okay. You want to be a great, big, powerful controller and control a family, a city, a country? Okay. You want to control the universe? If you have the piety, become Brahma. But nothing satisfies the soul. But you want to try. But there is another purpose to this world that goes on simultaneously with that purpose for the conditioned soul. The other purpose is that for sadhana. Nitya sadasya bhavasya prakattam riddhi sadhyata kriti sadhya bhavetsa sadhana devi. To perform sadhana, so a soul can perform sadhana, because one cannot go to Goloka Vrindavan unless one loves Krishna. So unless the material world was there so one could perfect his devotion, then no one could go back to Godhead. So this is the parallel purpose of the material world for the devotees, so that they can perfect their Krishna consciousness and attain the Lord's lotus feet in Goloka Vrindavan. But the scientists don't have that mood. The ruler of this planet should therefore know that all the inhabitants, especially human beings, have come to this material world for sense enjoyment. It is therefore the duty of the ruler to satisfy them in their sense enjoyment, as well as to elevate them in Krishna consciousness so that they can all ultimately return home back to Godhead. So there's that dual purpose that the king, because if there's a person who really wants sense enjoyment, he really wants something specific to enjoy. If you tell him, just chant Hare Krishna, forget your sense enjoyment, it's temporary anyway, he just simply will not listen. But if one, as the king's duty is, organizes a way that he can have his material pleasures, gain his material wife, family, animals, wealth, grains, whatever, but in such a way that he simultaneously develops Krishna consciousness, then the king has fulfilled his purpose in ruling. He knows the purpose of the creation. So this is what's explained in the Bhagavad Gita, basically. So with this idea in mind, the king or government head should rule the world. In this way, everyone will be satisfied, materially, spiritually. How can this be accomplished? There are many examples like Prithu Maharaj, and the history of his regency, his ruling this planet, is elaborately described in Srimad Bhagavatam. Even in this fallen age, if these rulers, governors, and presidents take advantage of Prithu Maharaj's example, there will certainly be a reign of peace and prosperity throughout the world. 56. Prithu Maharaj, by following these principles, became as celebrated a king as Somaraj, the king of the moon. He was also powerful and exacting like the sun god, who distributes heat and light and at the same time exacts all the planetary waters. Prithu Maharaj was so strong and powerful that no one could disobey his order any more than one could conquer fire itself. He was so strong that he was compared to Indra, the king of heaven, whose power is insuperable. No one could surpass it. On the other hand, Prithu Maharaj was as tolerant as the earth, and in fulfilling various desires of human society, he was like heaven itself. The beginning of Prabhupada's purport. It is the duty of the king to give protection to the citizens and to fulfill their desires. At the same time, the citizens must obey the laws of the state. So there is a balance. Everyone should have their desires fulfilled, but everyone can't do whatever they want. So there is freedom, but that freedom has to be within certain parameters, certain boundaries, like a child put in a playground in his yard. There's a fence around the yard. He can be free, but within the fenced-in area. So the king's job was to enforce the parameters that the citizens could enjoy their freedom in to fulfill their desires. And those parameters were within the Vedic injunctions in the Vedic system. At the same time, the citizens must obey the law of the state. Maharaj Prithu maintained all the standards of good government, and he was so invincible that no one could disobey his orders any more than a person could stop heat and light emanating from a fire. He was so strong and powerful that he was compared to the king of heaven, Indra. 58. Just as rainfall satisfies everyone's desires, Maharaj Prithu used to satisfy everyone. He was like the sea, in that no one could understand his depths. And he was like Meru, the king of hills, in the fixity of his purpose. of immovable objects, Krishna says. I am Meru. Yes? Meru or the Himalayas? Oh, okay. Maharaj Prithu's intelligence and education were exactly like that of Yamaraj, very fair and broad. The superintendent of death, his opulence was compared to the Himalaya mountains, where all valuable jewels and medals are stocked. He possessed great riches like Kuvera, the treasurer of the heavenly planets, and no one could reveal his secrets, for they were like the demigods Varuna, very deep like the ocean. So Yamaraj is the judicial expert, the judge. 60. In his bodily strength and the strength of his senses, Maharaj Prithu was as strong as the wind, which can go anywhere and everywhere. So when Krishna says, I am as purifying like the wind, this perhaps is an indication that when Krishna wants to purify, he can go anywhere and everywhere to purify. Because he's that strong in his purifying power. He is in everyone's heart. Just by chanting his names, every place becomes pure. And just by chanting his names, a chandal becomes fit to do what? Perform yajnas. So that is extremely purifying. To be that purifying, one needs to be that strong, like the wind, which can go anywhere and everywhere. Wonderful. As far as his intolerance was concerned, he was just like the all-powerful Rudra, expansion of Lord Shiva or Sadashiva. In what sense intolerance is glorified? Usually we glorify tolerance, the opposite. In what sense is intolerance glorified?
Not to tolerate the masses.
Yes, what's an example of another king who was intolerant and who was glorified? Yes, who was he intolerant of? Kali was beating a cow. You dare do this in my kingdom? Pulled out his sword and was going to kill him immediately. Tolerant or intolerant? Intolerant. A king must be, like if a citizen is being robbed and the king is come, oh, you should just be tolerant, it must be Krishna's mercy. No one respects a king like that. If the king protects the citizens, intolerant of rogues and thieves, then the people become so appreciated, they feel secure and protected. In his personal in his bodily beauty, he was just like Cupid. In his thoughtfulness, he was like a lion. In his affection, he was like Swayambhuva Manu. And in his ability to control, he was like Lord Brahma. In his personal behavior, Prithu Maharaj exhibited all good qualities. And in spiritual knowledge, he was exactly like Brihaspati. In self-control, he was like the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. Where's an example of the Supreme Personality of Godhead being expert in self-control? Dattatreya, okay. Narayan Rishi. Yes, what else? Huh? Yes, that's the one I was thinking. Bhrigu Muni. He kicked Lord Narayan on the chest. And what did Lord Narayan, after Lord Shiva became angry, Brahma became angry, what did Lord Narayan say? My chest is so hard, perhaps you have hurt your foot. I will treasure this mark that you have so kindly touched me with your lotus foot. So tolerant. But all the ones that everyone else offered were also examples of tolerance. Self-control, rather. And Bhrigu Muni's conclusion, yes, he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As far as his devotional service was concerned, he was a great follower of devotees who were attached to cow protection and the rendering of all service to the spiritual master and the Brahmins. He was perfect in his shyness and in his gentle behavior, and when he engaged in some philanthropic activity, he worked as if he was working for his own personal self. We'll read the opening part of Prabhupada's purport here. When Lord Chaitanya talked to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, the Lord honored him as the incarnation of Brihaspati. Brihaspati is the chief priest of the heavenly kingdom, and he is a follower of the philosophy known as Brahmavad or Mayavad. Brihaspati is also a great logician. It appears from this statement that Maharaj Prithu, although a great devotee, constantly engaged in the loving service of the Lord, he could defeat all kinds of impersonalists and Mayavadis by his profound knowledge of Vedic scriptures. We should learn from Maharaj Prithu that a Vaishnava or devotee must not only be fixed in the service of the Lord, but if required, must be prepared to argue with the impersonalist Mayavadis with all logic and philosophy and defeat their contention that the absolute truth is impersonal. Prabhupada never misses an opportunity to Nivashesha Sanyavadi Prashkatya Deza Tarane, never misses an opportunity to chastise impersonalists, Mayavadis, and bogus so-called scientists also. And the final text, I'll read the last paragraph of the purport to 62. Because that point that he worked in his philanthropic activity exactly as he was, as if he was working for himself, what does that mean?
Yeah,
because most people are selfish, and they only work when they get something out of that work, and then they may work very hard if they get enough out of that work. But he worked as hard as if he was working for himself, for the benefit of others. It's glorious. The last paragraph of Prabhupada's purport to 62. Also, like all Vaishnavas, Maharaj Prithu was devoted to cow protection, spiritual masters, and qualified Brahmins. Prithu Maharaj was also very humble, meek, and gentle. And whenever he performed any philanthropic work or welfare activity for the general public, he would labor exactly as if he were tending to his own personal necessities. In other words, his philanthropic activities were not for the sake of show, but were performed out of personal feeling and commitment. All philanthropic activities should be thus performed. Very nice, very sweet, very, very uplifting. And the last verse, text 33 in purport in this chapter. Throughout the whole universe, in the higher, lower, and middle planetary systems, Prithu Maharaj's reputation was loudly declared, and all ladies and saintly persons heard his glories, which were as sweet as the glories of Lord Ramachandra. Prabhupada's purport. In this verse, the words Trinam and Rama are significant. It is the practice amongst ladies to hear and enjoy the praises of certain heroes. From this verse, it appears that Prithu Maharaj's reputation was so great that ladies all over the universe would hear of it with great pleasure. At the same time, his glories were heard all over the universe by the devotees, and they were as pleasing as Lord Ramachandra's glories. Lord Ramachandra's kingdom is still existing, and recently there was a political party in India named the Ramarajya Party, which wanted to establish a kingdom resembling the kingdom of Ram, so they considered the kingdom of Ram the ideal kingdom. Unfortunately, modern politicians want the kingdom of Ram without Ram himself. So Prabhupada's purports and Maharaj Prithu's activities demonstrate the ideal kingdom with Krishna in the center. The king leads in this way, puts Krishna in the center, and the citizens place Krishna in the center. Although they have banished the idea of God consciousness, they still expect to establish the kingdom of Ram. Such a proposal is rejected by devotees. Prithu Maharaj's king reputation was heard by saintly king persons because he exactly represented Lord Ramachandra, the ideal king. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the fourth canto, 22nd chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam entitled Prithu Maharaj's Meeting with the Four Kumaras. Next chapter, Krishna willing, tomorrow we shall begin. And this is the final chapter about Prithu Maharaj, which tells of his going back home, back to Godhead. How many classes will we have on that? And there should be a gesture made. The water, when we offer a flower to Prabhupada, for example, or to Krishna, does Krishna need flowers? Does Prabhupada need flowers? Maybe they like flowers, perhaps. But it is a gesture. It is a gesture, representative representation of the affection and gratitude.
So now my question is, which attitude you could help so that the person gives the proper value and becomes grateful and really takes advantage of what they're
doing? Well, in the example that you gave of the parents, do the parents stop dealing with the children because the children are young and foolish?
Yes, I give the example that generally sometimes they cannot perceive. They take for granted that they have to help me, this is their obligation, they are not grateful. Or a student,
so,
they may not be grateful if I say I will give him.
So what qualities do the parent has that allows them to act like that?
What qualities
do the parents have that allow them to continue to act like that despite the children? Name a quality. Compassion, tolerance. Those were the two that I was thinking. Patience. Affection. Huh? Yeah, the Vatsalya Prem. Feel responsible. So these are same principles, same qualities. But then they are not foolish either. On the other side, because you said, just using your term, they're trying to exploit you maybe, take advantage of you. So one shouldn't be foolish either. So what is the line between being compassionate and being foolish? That you have to decide according to the time, circumstances, who you are, who is the person you're dealing with. On one side, those glorious qualities, compassion, tolerance, affection. On the other side, don't be foolish. One time with one of Prabhupada's servants who kept on coming and going and doing nonsense and coming back, and Prabhupada would always accept him. And then one time, in 1976, he says, my patience or my tolerance or my mercy, I can't remember the exact, has run out with you. No more. And then he accepted him back again. My mercy has run out with you. No more. And then he came back. Took him back again.
Even if you have mercy, but you should make the person understand that this is mercy. Like Prabhupada, he said, I'm not going to give you mercy.
How
again.
Can you make someone understand who doesn't... How you can't make someone understand anything. The teacher's business is not to learn the student. The teacher's business is to teach. The student's business is to learn. You can't make anyone learn. The teacher cannot make anyone to learn. So Prabhupada used to say, try to understand. But not, you must understand. You have to understand. How can you make someone understand? If you want to deal with your students like that, you will end up in constant anxiety. Your business is to teach in a proper way, and the student's business is to learn. So if the student isn't doing his business properly, that is not your fault. But you should make sure that you're doing your business properly, your teaching business. It is said that there was one time when Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was giving one of his disciples sannyas, and literally his wife came in and dragged him away. And what did, you know what Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur did? He cried. He didn't think, well, I'm doing my business properly, even like that. And he has not done his business properly, although it's true. But yet he cried out of compassion, saying, I could not save this soul. And he cried. You cannot force anyone to learn, and neither is forcing the business of the teacher. Teaching is the business of the teacher, and learning is the business of the student. Everyone should do their own duty. You can bring the horse to the river or the water, you cannot force him to drink. But you shouldn't be foolish either.
I think one thing is that actually the person will learn more if he understands this is his own self-interest. Because if
they don't have the mind, if a student doesn't have the mind, you cannot force him to have that mind. He may not be mature enough. You're not God. Krishna can force. You leave that business to God. First, you have to have. Then you give as much as you can. The more you have, it appears the more you want to give. And those who have more, it seems like their tolerance and compassion and their good qualities are very great. An ocean. Kripa Sindhu Mayi Vacha. But this is a very important point, in my opinion. You can't do the student's duty for him. But you should do the teacher's duty if you're teaching. The teacher should do their duty, the student should do their duty. Okay? This is the Prabhupada, I didn't read all the purports, so Prabhupada explained it. This was the Vedic concept. That everything was the property of the Brahmins. Everything was the kingdom was the property of the Brahmins. And the king ruled the kingdom on behalf of the Brahmins. All wealth belongs to the Brahmins. That was the other point. It's a different concept. Because the Brahmins represent the Supreme Lord. So the king, his duty was to rule on behalf of the Brahmins. So he took instructions from them how to rule the citizens. As soon as we start thinking I'm ruling on my own, doing anything on my own behalf, there's a problem. Then we're out of the mode of servant. Immediately, Maya.
Social welfare.
Yeah. but no, no, no. But okay, but I would clarify that Prabhupada insisted with doing the greatest welfare, social welfare.
But here, is that referring to preaching, which we understand is the highest welfare, or is it actually
everything,
activities?
Everything. Because his, because the devotees, they're not supposed to, it's, if we do the medical work, then who will do the preaching work? There's so many people doing the medical work. But the medical work should go on. And the philanthropic work should go on for Krishna's pleasure. This is so on the social level, the society level. But Prabhupada wanted some people to concentrate on the spiritual level. But if you have a society without any welfare activities, it's very hard. Very hard.
That's a live-by question. I might put it in time and maybe a question to finish.
Okay, we'll save yours for the end.
No, I'm not good.
You have a heavy one? The what? The rulers and governors and present. Whether it will happen or it won't happen, it doesn't interfere with the truth of the statement. The whole Krishna consciousness movement is based on the principle that if you satisfy Krishna, then the individual is happy. And if, yes, individually and collectively. If we disagree with that, then we disagree with the basic principle of Krishna consciousness. That by inherently we're servants of Krishna. But whether you think it's going to happen or not, that's another thing. But we could say, I could ask you the question, why don't you think it's going to happen? Yes. In other words, let me just, so I just preempt your answer a little bit. Our vision of reality and what can happen and what can't happen is very limited. If I ask you the question, if Krishna wants it to happen, will you still say it can't happen? Of course you won't. So we take reality as what we see, the social structures we see before us right now. I remember hearing Prabhupada speaking in Australia. I heard the tape or I read it in somewhere, where one devotee who was from Yugoslavia at that time, the Buddha, he said, can I translate Prabhupada's books? You remember, you read this conversation? I want to translate your books into Yugoslavian, but is there any chance really of it's a communist country, of Krishna consciousness spreading there? It doesn't seem like it. And Prabhupada's reply was, that is the situation now, but it won't always be like that. At that time, it was inconceivable. It was inconceivable that there'd be big temples in Russia, because USSR, heavy communist. It was inconceivable, but Prabhupada said it won't always be like that. And how many of you know devotees or have met devotees from Slovenia, Croatia? So many, such nice devotees. At that time it was inconceivable. So what, because it's inconceivable to us now, doesn't mean it's always going to be like that, because we are, after all, Dr. Frog in the well. We have a very limited conception of reality and what Krishna is going to do. So how can we become instrumental to reverse that tendency? That's a question, a legitimate question. Purify yourself, be a servant of Krishna, try your best to do your service. Who knows where it's going to end? So someone distributes books. So we don't know. Some person, a great king, may pick up, a person with the qualities may pick up this and and the light goes on in his consciousness. But we don't know that, and if we distribute the book saying, oh, I'm going to only distribute it to that future king, no, we just do our duty. We should know what our duty is. It's your duty to save the world and become like Maharaj Pitu, personally. Well, okay, if you ask me that question, I would say, I doubt it. Very strongly. But what is your duty? Do you know what your duty is? That, what is your service? That should be what a devotee asks himself. What is my service? How am I going to please, put Krishna in the center? How am I going to please my spiritual master? That is the object of a devotee's meditation. And if your service happens to be ruling the world, then Krishna will let you know.
Charity begins from home. At least ISKCON manages, they can start the party in the Maharaj. Set an example. The needs of devotees, both materially and spiritually. Sometimes materially they are not caring. Sometimes the devotees are
But my own viewpoint on that is I'd rather not tell them what their duty is. I'd rather figure out what my duty is. Because as soon as you say, at least they should do that, then I find... Okay, so what I'm suggesting is we should try to think of what our own duty is, rather than trying to think of what everyone else's duty is. That's my realization after being in this society for 36. It's much better to keep your mind focused on what your own duty is. Unless someone asks you, if some ISKCON manager says to you, Prabhu, what is my duty? Then you can tell them. But to try to tell someone, it's the same point, you can't learn anyone. Huh? Well, then we should, and we're also not humble enough to follow ourselves, so we can't even accuse, this is my opinion on that, at least at this point in my life. You should know your duty and try to do that properly. Unless your duty is to tell ISKCON managers what to do. If that's part of your duty. I don't know. Maybe it is. Maybe it will be later. And in a similar vein, one time I was in Jagannath Puri when they were bringing the wood for the new Jagannath, for Navakalevaram, the Daru. And to see all the army people, you know, protecting and engaging in the service of the Lord like that was so inspiring. Yes.
Well, I'm coming back to Vrindavan. I heard every day in the army they chant the Guru Bhajans about Ram and Krishna. Every day in the Indian army. Yeah. And as well as Sunday they special people.
Very nice. Yes.
People are based on the Portuguese commentary.
Just let me repeat it in here. So, Jiva Goswami makes an interesting point in his commentary to which text?
Text 54-62.
54-62, right at the end of the chapter.
He says that whatever praises were sung by the Vandis.
Whatever praises were sung by the Vandis.
In chapter 16.
Yes.
Have
been confirmed here in these texts. The praises they had sung earlier about what qualities he will exhibit were actually exhibited by him in this, explained in this text that he actually did that.
Comparing it to the Lokapalas, the sun, the moon, the fire, the luna, the air.
Yes.
Again, the same things were
very interesting.
They were predicted, and here
yeah. And originally, Preetam Maharaj didn't want to hear those because, let me do something first. So he allowed it to happen, but he actually did it. Thank you. Now we have a light question.
Well, it comes to the point of these glorifications. It said he was fixed in his savior.
He was fixed in...
fixed in his service like the Himalaya, and his bodily beauty was like Jupiter. It said
yes.
His thoughtfulness was like a lion. Which
yes.
I understand has been, he was a large thought, a great thinker. But what the next one, I couldn't... Could you clarify, it's why I'm doing that. It said his affection was like...
He was affectionate to the tilt, like the Swayambhuva Manu was affectionate to the citizens.
It was too simple. I was looking for complex answers. That's it in itself.
What was it?
He says in affection, he was compared to Swayambhuva Manu.
Affection to the citizens.
Yeah.
Because Manu is the father of mankind.
Yeah.
Fathers are naturally affectionate.
I thought there was something specific about Swayambhuva Manu and his personality, but I didn't.
Well, if that's it, that's it. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Preetam Maharaj ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Bhaktivinoda ki jai.